You're listening to the Known Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Known Legacy Ministries. For more information, go to knownlegacy.org. Now here's your hosts, Bill and Travis.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, Bill. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Dude, I missed that intro. It's been a while.
I know. It has been a while, man. How are you doing?
Good. It's been good on the hiatus.
Yes, yes.
But it's nice to get back together and see your, I was going to say beautiful face, but just see your faces.
See your faces. Kyle, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, thank you so much for checking out the podcast. We have a special guest today. His name is Sam Hart, and he's a songwriter in Nashville, does amazing ministry. Some would call him an assassin for Jesus or a ninja for Jesus. I'm not saying who.
I mean, who would?
But some people do.
They wouldn't even see him coming, so they wouldn't be able to say it.
It's going
to
be a fantastic conversation about perseverance, overcoming, your stories of how God gets you where he wants you to be and things of that. Listen, Known Legacy, always check us out online. Facebook, YouTube, if you want to watch the videos and see what we look like. You can check us out on Instagram. Questions, comments, concerns, info@knownlegacy would be great. We have two huge events coming up that I'd really like to let you know about.
Yeah.
Event number one is we have a date night coming up in September. And this is going to be in the Allen area of the DFW, Texas.
Yes, sir.
And it's going to be a phenomenal night for you and your wife. Our job, Bill and I, our heart is always that we would, that was awesome, that we would give you guys laughter, joy, and start conversations that every marriage needs to have, but it's difficult to start on your own.
Yeah.
And then the next weekend, we have the men's retreat coming up, and spots are filling up, so make sure you sign up for that and get that going.
Getting excited about them. And we are so excited about that, so excited about being back. And Lord, I'm so excited about the question of the day.
So here's the question. School's about to start. My wife is the teacher. She goes back to the classroom on the 1st of August or 2nd or 3rd or whatever day that is. And so as a kid, when you were growing up, what was your favorite thing about going back to school? And what was your worst thing, the thing you hated about going back to school? Bill, you go first.
Okay. So the thing I hated was summers were awesome in New York because you just kind of got to like – hang out all day. I think we talked about used to play hide and seek in these four little blocks. In fact, I went back there this year for our summer just to kind of.
Was it bigger or smaller than you remember?
It was a lot smaller.
Yep.
But I wasn't as fast. So even though I have new sneakers and no one cares that I can run fast anymore. But anyways, that's another point. But it was so cool because everyone kind of hung out. It was that kind of fun thing. We just play games all day. And then that one day it all just stops.
Yes.
And you're back up at like 6:30. You know, or whatever, and you have to get ready for school, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's what I hated. What I loved about it was you could kind of like, to some degree, reinvent yourself every year.
You'd be
a little bit different. You could act a little different. You say, okay, this year I'm going to start this. Now, 9 times out of 10, I just continued in the old process, but it was a moment of, okay, maybe this could be something new, and I would try being a different person. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, man, I'm a community. I'm a people person, and so hanging out with people all day long, it was like the greatest gift.
Yeah.
I loved the people. I loved the classmates. I loved the stories. I loved all of that. So getting back into that routine with some different people than I hang out with in the neighborhood, I loved it. I hated school, back to school shopping. I hated it. My mom hated it because I hated it, and it was like the most miserable. We'd go to – oh, it was just – the whole process was horrible because I didn't know fashion, but I knew that I should know fashion. And so I had this like undue pressure.
And what you did know is that mom, corduroys are not fashion. Right.
Well, or the super stiff Huskies.
Yeah.
That you would get from Sears, you know, because I was a little bit of a bigger kid. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you were bigger?
I was a little bigger. And just all of it. And so that was me. Kyle, what about you? What are your thoughts?
So growing up in North Texas, the worst thing about going back to school was two-a-days.
Oh.
That was before they treat them like.
Before the handful of deaths.
Yes,
when you threw up in your helmet, they're like, keep it on and smell.
It was before Gatorade, let's put it that way.
Exactly.
The best thing was, this was before iPhones and all that, so you had your neighborhood friends, but going back to school, then you got to reconnect with all your friends.
School friends, yes.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. That's exactly
it. Pre-technology, so.
Love it.
Well, man, we are so glad to have Sam on today. Sam Hart, thank you so much for being on, man. We're excited to have you on today.
Oh man, love the applause! Thanks for the invite.
Well, and we would love to hear your maybe highs and lows from school when you were there.
Yeah, so I was homeschooled from K through 11, And then they unleashed me on public school for senior year.
Oh, no.
And so what I loved about it was I could just stop for lunch and make any sort of burrito I could imagine. I mean,
yes.
I invented this thing called hot dog burritos where you get a tortilla and hot dogs and cheese and mustard. I mean...
It was
What kind of cheese? What kind of cheese?
whatever was in the fridge that day.
You know what those are called?
That looked like cheese, by the way. Anything that looked like cheese.
Yeah, you know what those are called in Texas? Donkey tails. They're called donkey tails. My son's favorite
that's a
meal.
Thing?
It is. There's a restaurant down in Grapevine that's known for chili, and my son was there. He was like sixth grade, and he's like, "Well, it's a donkey tail," and they're like, "Well, it's a hot dog with a tortilla." And ever since then, man, when he has a chance to make lunch, Luke will make a donkey tail every single time.
I've never heard it, so that's amazing.
Yep.
I thought Dude, Sam made it. I thought you created them, man.
Well, I thought
I created it, so I'm kind of sad right now.
No, I would go back to them and ask for 10%. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I think the thing I hated was just no bus ride. Like, it's like, what is the demarcation point? Like, what is the transition from brushing your teeth to now I'm at school? It was very disorienting. Basically, I was disoriented my whole life until 18. And that's why I did music.
I want to deep dive into that. What the culture shock was that senior year, you walk in and you've been homeschooled, so you kind of have your homeschool friends, and I'm sure there were some sports you were playing, and all of a sudden you literally get thrown into, because it was Southern California, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Where exactly?
San Diego.
Oh, man. I lived in San Diego for 3 years.
Oh, yeah?
Tierra awesome. Santa. I went to San Diego School of Creative and Performing Arts. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
I didn't know that about you going to performing arts school.
Yeah.
Good thing we haven't done this for 8 years together.
I'm a theater kid.
That's
shocker.
Awesome.
I know,
right?
So what was that like for you? You get into high school, your senior year, and it is, I can only imagine the culture shock that was.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of like you. I'm a people person, so it was weird to not be around anybody from like age 6 until 17,
right.
Except siblings. So... It was so classic. I can't even go into it. It was just so classic. But I think for me, it was just like people, culture. And so for me, it was totally great. But I think the shock was more for the other kids, the other people, and teachers probably too. It's like, who is that kid with the briefcase and the suit walking through the halls, putting up posters?
Selling us Amway products.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that's way too close to home. It's probably half
17-year-old male in high school. There's a girl. There's a girl. There's a girl.
There's a girl. There's a girl. Not my sister. There's, not my sister. Not my sister.
There's girls.
Wait, this is a co-ed thing?
That's awesome.
Dude, well, we are so glad to have you on today, man. And dude, so, we've had some great conversations and have had a chance to connect. But share your story with all of our listeners. Just share your story and your journey, what you do. I mean, Sam is a singer-songwriter, but share more of that in detail of who you are, how you got to do that, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so in short, what I do a lot of days and a lot of nights is produce records. So I get with artists, signed, indie, whatever, and we typically write a song together. They bring a finished song, and I help them record it so they can put it out. So sometimes it's singles, sometimes it's EPs, sometimes albums. And then kind of related to that, but parallel, is I get to write songs too. So I'm signed to this label called Curb Word, and the publishing company's up on Music Row. It's really cool. Right across from the old RCA building.
Oh, yeah.
And so, kind of living the dream in that sense. And it's just a faith walk, man. Just learning how it's not at all up to me, any outcomes, and yet I still have to get up early and work like it is up to me. So trusting God, but also just learning how to steward it without, I love this thing I heard recently, like my worth doesn't come from work. And now I'm 41 years old, and probably easily the last 2 decades, my life's been about learning that the hard way. So anyways, how I got into it, 7 years old, I went to this old Jesus Music era artist, and they were doing a free concert at my church, and my parents took me, 7 years old, and literally that's the night I knew what I was going to do with my life. And it wasn't even the style of music, wasn't any of that. It was just the way that this particular artist used songs to disciple the room. And something about that, there was just this like shepherd's heart of me that really connected to that. So anyways, we can get into the pros and cons of, you know, why I got into ministry and then music, because I was a worship pastor for 17 years in California before moving to Nashville to do music full time. So, you know, there was, I think it was in me, there's a calling aspect, but a lot of it, honestly, and we could get more into it later, was just that I was looking for a family and a place to belong and love. You know, I was looking for affirmation, and found out over many years that the church staff is not a family. You don't do your job, you get fired.
Yep.
and congregation can't give you love just because you're good at what you do. And but I was looking for that, especially most of my 20s. So
what obviously married with some kids, I'm assuming. Correct?
Yes. So okay. Married my high school sweetheart, and we have three kids. This year is 20 years of marriage, which is awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was that conversation like with her? Because often God will stir the heart of a man to do something bold and courageous, but the wife is typically more of a roots person of deep community, living by family. If your sweetheart's from high school, chances are her entire family probably lived not too far away from your family. What was that conversation at the journey like to say, hey, we're packing up everything from SoCal and we're moving to Nashville probably before everyone else is thinking it's the cool thing to do? What was that like for you guys?
Yeah, nailed it. All of that's absolutely true. And I think we had two versions of it. So probably 10 years into marriage.
Chapter one.
Yeah, we went to Central California for a few years. We went up to this multi-site church. We started a label there. And that's really how I started getting into producing more full time. I loved just helping artists who were there really just to volunteer and serve the church imagine that they had, you know, more ability and talent than they could see in themselves, and really just start to empower that and leverage that, kind of like Ephesians says, like, leaders equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. And I think there was a moment when we were all sitting around, us paid professionals or whatever, and realized, like, hey, if we're supposed to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry, why are we the ones with all the stage time doing all the work? And so we basically created a discipleship pipeline and a worship school and a label. And we ended up with 11 bands, and they were the worship leadership at the church. And so that was a really, really fun time. But moving there was a big breaking out of our, like, kind of like you said, like, you know, uprooting and leaving everything familiar to go do that. And then through that, we got involved with a lot of inner city ministry and, like, urban ministry, which was really cool.
Right.
Because there was a thing later, I think the Lord was preparing us for there. Especially my wife, she came from a family of law enforcement. So her dad was a detective and worked in vice and in narcotics. And
then you married his daughter. Like, oh, talk dude. About the trust that had to be built.
I didn't get a yes, you can marry her until question three, until the third time I asked him.
Wow.
But now he's like a dad to me. I love him so much, but at the time they were just like, why does my daughter like this music bum? Like, what does she see in him? And I was a music bum, dude. I went to community college for one semester and then dropped out to go on tour, and didn't even make enough to pay my bills on that trip. And dude, it was a mess, but God's good and helped me to learn just to have just enough idiocy to get a job. And finally, they let me marry her. And then
I feel like that should be the title of your husband book. Just Enough Idiocy.
Just Enough Idiocy.
Oh, that's chapter one and the title.
Chapter Heck one. Yeah.
That probably defines today as well.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's very true.
I cut you off, though. Continue on.
No. It was a big move moving up to the Central Valley. And then where we ended up living was kind of like an inner city area. It was... God really, like, brought Kristen, my wife's Kristen, out of her comfort zone, and for me, just helped me to realize, like, I'm listening to him and his voice, not necessarily, like, what everyone else around me wants for me and all that stuff. And so, yeah, talking through that with my wife, but up there, I ended up burning out really hardcore. I had to get out of ministry for a bit, take a break, and basically, after that, everything really changed because I had to get on mood stabilizer meds, which totally made it so that I couldn't lead. Like, I just didn't care about anything.
Right.
So anyways, it was only about a year later that we ended up leaving there. And that season was really healing. So I call us after that Sam and Kristen 2.0.
Gotcha.
Because of how different that was. So through that process, probably within a few years, we went through some marriage counseling and things like that, and we ended up at a couple other churches. One of them ended up being like, I'll just say, like, ended up being a thing that did not work out very well. And so during that process, we just kind of healed enough as individuals with enough counseling and therapy. Because when I burnt out, I realized that I'd been running from a lot of unresolved things that I just never looked at. I didn't know how to name my feelings. I didn't know how to really just deal with negative anything. So that shows why for years I was like medicating in all these different ways. I was, working, which ended up leading to the burnout because I was just working.
Yep.
And I still to this day, that can be my go-to yeah. drug is just work. To avoid things that are negative. But at the time, I didn't even know that was a thing. So dealing with that, we got to a point where we started having conversations that maybe more healthy newlyweds are having, sort of like, hey, if money was no issue, what would you do with your life? Those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
So here we are like 15 years in almost, and we're having those. And I guess it was probably about year 13 of marriage. And so through those conversations, I at one point had said, I think if money was no issue, I would move to Franklin, Tennessee and make the most impactful Christian music with the most, impactful, dope music makers. And her jaw dropped and she was like, what? I didn't even know this. I didn't even know this about you. And I'm like, yeah, when I was a little boy, I was reading like liner notes in this place. Franklin was always in my heart. Hmm. And I just know that's where people that want to do music go. And so we started talking about it and she's like, man, if I knew that, I mean, why didn't we try to do that years ago? Let's see.
What an amazing woman.
Let's pray about that.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that conversation could have happened without all that other stuff. Because like you said, we had our roots deep in San Diego. All of our family was around, our kids' schools and friends and community. So it was crazy, man. So it took us a year and a half from that point to process the whole Tennessee idea and figure out, what does it even look like to move there and sell our house and find jobs and raise our kids there? And it was a long process, but it was a really good one.
So I think one of the things that is so encouraging, and that's what I love about having these guys on, because we see the success of today and we forget that, man, we have a really good, thick, rich theology of suffering that we don't often talk about in the church.
Yeah.
And how God will utilize suffering within our own hearts and our own situations to produce the direction that he's been calling us to for a while, to have the conversations that we need to have with ourselves, with him, and with the people that matter most to us. And so I guess my question for you is, like, let's say there's a guy who is finding himself, he's listening to this, and he goes, dude, I'm a workaholic.
Yeah.
And I'm sacrificing my family at the altar of my identity in my performance. What kind of conversation would you have with him to encourage him to kind of to be still and go into those dark places and let God figure some stuff out with him?
Mm-hmm. Man, I mean, in some ways, I'm thinking to myself 10 years ago, and I'm like, okay, that's who I'm talking to right now. And to myself 10 years ago, I'd be like, okay, bro, first of all, you don't know everything and you can't control everything. So it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to ask for help.
That's good. Yeah.
So it's starting there and wanting something more. I would say number two is wanting something more for yourself than just the comfort mundane that you've settled into.
Yeah.
And then three, I would say, even though I don't think 10 years ago me would have listened very well to this, but more recently, I've discovered the work of a guy named Chip Dodd, Voice of the Heart, Needs of the Heart. He's written some really, really good material. And one of the things that he helps guys do, and Bill and I talked about this before, is to be able to name the 8 core emotions. And for whatever reason, maybe a lot of guys are like me, maybe I'm just a weirdo, I was not able to do that most of my life until a couple years ago. And so now, and he's got this whole chart in one of his books where you're able to identify the core emotions, anger, sad, what is it? Hurt, lonely, fear, shame, guilt, and glad, and go through. And what I do almost every single morning is just journal through it. Like, what am I feeling today?
Ooh.
And then there's also, he has a book called Needs of the Heart, and every single one of those emotions has a need that needs to be met. And I think 10 years ago me, and maybe a guy listening to this, like you described, 10 years ago me did not know, first of all, that I wasn't angry all the time and grumpy. I was actually really sad about some things that I had not accepted. I had not accepted that. I didn't know how. And I needed some healthy comfort. Like, the extra bourbon and the porn was not really helping comfort me. It wasn't comfort that would stay. It was just momentary distraction.
Yep.
And I think 10 years ago me just didn't know how to be like, you know what, I need some healthy comforts. I need some joy in my life on the way to acceptance, right? Or I felt a lot of fear too. So down the list, there's fear. And I had a lot of anxiety and fear, and I never would have said I'm a fearful person. I was always the risk taker, the guy that was dreaming big, willing to go and tackle whatever. But I had a lot of anxiety and fear that I didn't know how to deal with. And if you go over to the needs section of the chart, the need for fear is protection and help and refuge. So I didn't know that if I'm fearful and anxious, I could go ask for help. I could ask for refuge and look for protection first from God, realizing he really is that refuge, but also to be able to just ask for it. And so that's something now I can look back on, realize I couldn't do then, but now I'm realizing, dude, part of this is just just the ability to be like, as a human, I don't have to know it all. I don't have to know everything. Like, Jesus knew I was human when he made me. He knew I was human when he died for me. He knew I was human. That's why I can come boldly before the throne of grace and find help in time of need. And it's not just forgiveness, because we think of the throne of grace as, oh man, I'm a bad person. No, you make mistakes. You're not a mistake, which is what we learn from healthy shame. Chip talks a lot about this in Voice of the Heart. So I would hand myself 10 years ago that book, and I would say, read this, do what it says. You'll be a lot healthier.
I love that, because I think we do a disservice to men because we have associated dealing with our emotions in a very feminine way.
Yes.
And it's talking and just copious amounts of talk. Yeah. And I think the biggest tool that we can give them, and I love how you identified it, and we're going to plug this book because I'm picking it up today.
Yeah, I want to check it out.
Chip Dobbs?
Dodd. D-O-D-D.
Dodd. Chip Dodd is... It's not a matter of just talking about it. It's a matter of like having the tools to identify it and then sitting with it.
Yeah.
And again, I think most of us, the biggest challenge for men is we keep a pace in our lives that doesn't allow us to just be still and allow God to reveal those things and then kind of work on them with us to resolve them and to reveal to us, hey, here's the ways that you're trying to take care of it yourself. It's never going to work. It's a distraction. I want to take care of it in the deepest level to give you, to allow you to live out the life that I created you for, I've called you to, and I've actually gifted you for. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's fantastic. Now, you talked about journaling. Were you always a journaler, or was this journey kind of kicking that off? Because I know some guys are journalers. Some guys don't like. I have dyslexia. I can't spell, so I hated journaling for a long time, and now I find it's one of the most therapeutic things I do, just because it gets everything out of my brain onto paper.
Yeah,
you know. So, what were you a journaler before? How did that impact?
No, I always hated journaling, literally until about a year and a half, 2 years ago, because I thought of it. And seeing how other people would journal, it was like they were documenting their days. Like, here's what happened. Da, 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 da. And in my mind, I'm like, I want to freaking live my life, not write about it. Like, I'm missing out on this next moment. I want to drink life down to the last drop, not freaking. Anyways, so I kind of hated that about it. But what I found with this exercise I'm talking about is to be able to name the feeling. And then the hack is to be able to go, oh, and I need this, which is huge. Like benefit in life to be able to like not just know I'm feeling this, but I need this. But then, dude, where it really gets transformative is two things. One is to be able to bring that in the same journal. Maybe it's the next page or the same page. Like, God, thank you that you hear me, which is what Jesus prayed in the garden. God, I thank you that you hear me. and also this one. I thank you that you gave me the gift of feelings and that you want me to feel them because they're not good or bad, but they lead me to getting my needs met and living an abundant life. And then, God, today I'm feeling this and I need this. Would you help me to meet that somehow myself, or would you bring someone to help meet that need? And here's where the second part of that, the hack, that especially for married guys, is maybe somebody listening will identify with this, where like, man, for most of my marriage, I was so unable to go through that process that, say, there was some expectation I had of my wife and I felt rejected by her. So some expectation or something. Well, that rejection would turn into some sort of hurt. Bitterness. That I didn't even, I didn't know how to say I feel hurt. And, you know, according to this Chip's, you know, book, he talks about hurt. The need for hurt is attention. You need that hurt to get attention. Mm. Well, before you can get healing, that hurt needs attention. Well, if I didn't know I was hurt, then of course it's just going to fester because I'm going to stuff it and medicate it. And then that's going to turn into resentment. You said bitterness. Yep. Bitterness and resentment is really similar.
Yep.
And I'm just going to like hope it goes away or try to manipulate her to give me what I need through shame and guilt. And really what I need to do is learn how to say I'm hurt, and whether she meant to hurt me or not, that's not even the point. That hurt needs attention, and it starts with me giving it attention. Because there's times when that attention means, Sam, you're hurt, but she didn't do anything wrong. Boom. I mean, that's the attention it needs sometimes. Other times it's, hey, that hurt me when you did this thing, and I just wanted to share it with you. I'm not expecting you to fix it. I just need you to know it. And she can give that attention and be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Actually, I just, whatever. I had a headache. I was whatever. And like, let's revisit that or whatever. And then now, instead of it festering into resentment, there's relationship around it, which is incredible. And so for me, that's what that journaling exercise does.
Well, and the beauty is you're inviting your wife into the healing process, and you're inviting her into what she feels called to do is like support and be for you, not against you. But often they have no idea how to do that because we don't know what to identify and to let them know. And so it kind of defaults to these very base resentment kind of things. So that's absolutely, dude, we need to have you back. And that's why we call you a Jesus ninja / assassin.
Yeah.
And because this
is, how did you know what I do after dark?
I have people. I know things.
People who know people.
But this conversation has been so good and so fruitful. And so I really do appreciate it. And your willingness to go there, because some guys, it's hard to talk about it. And so I appreciate you being willing to talk about it.
And I think that's the big call to action today is, man, acknowledging, hey, I can either, because I'm guessing now that if you were dealing with these wounds in an even deeper level now, how different that would be in such a chaotic environment like the song industry.
Yeah.
Where literally everyone's rejecting 90% of what you do all the time. Nope, I don't like this. It doesn't sound good. You shouldn't do this. No, I don't like that line. And then everything would be an offense. And I love that you got it out of the way. And I think that's the biggest call is like, guys, for us to do the things that we need to as followers of Jesus, as men of God, as leaders of our family, we need to get those wounds out of the way that other people really aren't saying to us. Yeah. Like we're hearing it from a tone and a voice that's not real. It's from the enemy. So I love that you addressed that today, man. I love it. And so we definitely want to have you back on, man. We will definitely have you back on because I want to hear more about the songwriting side too.
Right.
At some point, but this was so valuable.
Well, this was all about, you know, our theme is wake up, gear up, and come alive. And this is all, like this whole conversation was about waking up.
The wake up part,
The wake up and to have a follow-up conversation of how do you leverage that to gear up, to understand your gifts, your callings, your unique journey that God's and how he's going to provide for you even when the bank account says different and how that has impacted you, your wife, and your kids to come alive. I would love that. So, man, Dan, thank you for the conversations.
Yeah, I would love to.
We'll get you back on. Man, I love it. So before we go to the Fast Five, any like final thoughts or statements or things you'd want to say to that guy out there who is in that, man, God has something great for him, but, man, he's got to deal with this. What was your encouragement be for him?
Yeah, I think it starts with shining light on just the inner self. So for me, that started during my burnout. I went to a counselor. Actually, it was a Christian who was a therapist, a lot of letters after his name, and he did some of these things a lot of us have heard of but don't know what they are, like EMDR, internal family systems, like these modes of therapy that really do help because it's blending science with the Bible when they're the right person. So to me, it's important to seek out someone who's a Christian and believes the Bible is God's word and that kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah.
But for me, that's where a lot of growth really started. That was about 10 years ago. And I feel like that jump started a ton. I had a lot of things I was avoiding and running from, and a lot of forgiveness that needed to happen. And sometimes you can't get to the next chapter until you take care of that basic stuff.
Yep.
And really, it's just getting to know yourself. I mean, a lot of times one of my friends said it this way, you come out of the womb and you just take your umbilical cord and snap it onto someone else. You know, we try to get our needs met through all these other things and people in our lives, and realizing, like, dude, in a real way, it really is just me and Jesus. He gives me the capacity to sit at his feet and get my needs met through him. And then I can go out there and start connecting with other people and other things, like my mission in life and all these big things. But it really does start there. So for me, it has to start there every morning, or else my day's weird, which, by the way, I didn't get to do my typical, like, daily quiet time with him this morning. So let's just redo this once I've had the right kind of start to my day.
All right, we'll just scrap this one and call it a day.
God is pretty faithful. I think he's done a pretty good job working and talking through you. And let's not miss the fact, like, man, you have a God who is for you guys. You have a God who knows you. He is not surprised by any of this. And he is a God who has so patiently been waiting for the situation to arrive where you finally break through and go, I can't do it on my own. I need you, Jesus. And he just delights in that and rejoices in that. There's never any shame in that he brings. There's never any guilt that he brings. He just brings joy and dedication and says, okay, let's get into the hard work that I've been waiting to do.
I love it. I love it.
Man. All right. Let's get on to the Fast Five.
Yeah, so we have another segment called Fast Five. Man, are you ready for it?
Ready or not, dude, I'm here for it.
Okay, so who do you most admire and why?
It probably changes depending on the day and depending on my mood. So this isn't fair to even start talking about it. I think right now I would say it's that guy Chip Dodd, that wrote that book. And dude, honestly, I don't know. I think he wrote it in 2001, and then a second edition in 2014, but it's been like top three on Amazon in the like Christian counseling or self-help world. Like, it's a pretty seminal work. It's really important. I know a lot of 12-step programs use it. A lot of men's ministries use it. In fact, I found out a church is going through it, so I'm going to be doing that study at this church I don't even go to this fall, because they're doing a 10-week study through that book, and I just want to mine more gold out of it. But anyways, I have some really fun stuff that I'm actually, I had the opportunity to connect with Chip, and we're working on some ideas on some ways to bring some of these things to men specifically and creatives here starting in Nashville and beyond. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Please do.
Awesome, dude. Yeah, let me know. Okay, where would you like to go on a vacation with your family?
Italy.
Okay, Italy.
Yeah.
Italy. Anything specific in Italy?
It's just something my wife and I have talked about for years. So we're probably going to go without the kids and then scope it out and then bring them back. So, yeah, we're talking about that as maybe the 20th thing, but we probably won't do it till the spring.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, congratulations. That's cool. Enjoy. Yeah, enjoy all. Congrats. I hear the food and the wine is truly just divine there.
Amen.
Divine wine. Look at you.
Thank you.
That's awesome. What are you currently reading, whether it's the Bible or another book?
Well, just so I don't have to drop the voice of the heart again, there's a book I just finished called The God Attachment. I'm looking up at my bookshelf. The God Attachment. Tim Clinton, I think, is the author. And it's so fascinating because it talks about attachment theory. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that. It's kind of therapeutic, so I apologize. But it talks about attachment theory and God and how often the questions that we get answered in the first 3 years of our lives, the answers to the question, am I loved, am I worthy of love, and can these people be trusted to love me? The way that we answer those determines how we're going to engage with the relationship for the rest of our life. So that's basically attachment theory in a nutshell. But then when we apply that to God, it really colors how we interact with God and how we trust him. So if our family of origin, or say our parents, our caretakers, didn't answer that we're lovable, that we're worthy of love, or that we are that they can be trusted, man, you apply that to God, those beliefs, you apply those to God, all of a sudden he's not trustable, you're not worthy, and And yeah, and you're not loved. So anyways, that's a really important book.
Nice.
What was the title again?
It's called The God Attachment.
God Attachment. All right.
Okay, cool. Cool. All right, number four, what is a goal you have for this year?
Get out of debt.
Okay. That's a good goal.
We had that conversation earlier today.
Yes, we did. Good goal.
Good luck on that.
Thanks.
I get it. We get it. It's okay. We get it. Number five, what's the most impactful piece of advice you've ever been given?
Yeah. So I had a mentor in my life in my 20s before a lot of any of the stuff we talked about today even started. But he looked at me and he said, Sam, rather than trying to be important, get intimately involved with the one who is important.
Yes.
And that kind of blew my mind, honestly. I was a little bit like, what are you talking about? But this guy could see right through me and see that so much of what was driving me is I didn't have a sense of worth. And so I was trying to find my worth by being involved in important things or being important or titles, climbing the ladder, all that kind of stuff, which I was trying to do like crazy in my 20s in ministry world. And he's like, bro, rather than trying to be important, just get involved with the one who is important. And that's so good, dude.
Love it. Love it.
That is fantastic. Well done,
sir. This has been really good, man.
Fantastic.
Sam, thank you so much for being on today. Super excited to finally get you on here and be a part of this. We'll definitely have you on again. I want to hear more about the jump from California to Franklin and all that with the move. We'd love to hear some more about that. But, man, so excited. Thank you so much for being a part of this. If you want to know more about Sam, you can go to Sam Hart Music. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so website is samhartmusic.com.
H-A-R-T.
No one will get much out of it unless they're looking to get a record produced or something. Instagram, Sam Hart Music. So.
That one's even better. And I know that you're coming up with a podcast soon, like you're coming out with a, you know, releasing your own podcast. And so we will share that once that comes
out
as well. But, man, thank you so much for being a part of it today, guys. Thank you so much for checking us out today. Man, you can, just like Travis said, check out the links for the men's retreat, the date night. We'd love to have you there. And if you like this, share it with your friends. Follow us, subscribe. And, man, we're so grateful to have a piece of your day today. Yep. Any final thoughts for you, Travis?
God bless you guys. Have a good week.
Have a good week.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be with you.
Thanks a lot,
man. Thanks for listening to the No Legacy Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. So email us your questions or comments to info@nolegacy.org.